Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth? The truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, chaotic, confusing world. So welcome to the 588th edition of SDG, Sola Dei Gloria. And remember, folks, we do this solely for the glory of God. And the title of this message today is 2023 Endgame Update Number 4. And a bit later in this message, folks, stay tuned, because we're going to tie it all into three more ominous parallels between both the days of Noah and Lot and what's going on today. You know, Jesus said in Luke 17, verses 26 through 28, "And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, and they were given in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, and they builded." Now last week we learned about these days, and we saw these days were full of secular philosophy, scientific progress, social plagues, sexual perversion, and I hope you stay tuned, because we've got three more ominous parallels between those days and today. And they include some very ominous things, because these are days of selfish prosperity. Yet solemn preaching is still out there, folks. And finally, we're going to be facing a sudden panic by the masses. But the bottom line, folks, is as believers, we may be in this world just as Noah and Lot were, but we're not of this world, because we're God's people and we're just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this all-out Luciferian war on humanity. And stay tuned to find out the latest news, folks, that the mainstream media is never going to tell you, as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, how did it all start? It all started with that lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, folks, let's look at something from last week's episode. Now, before we get into that review, remember, we've been taking 4 weeks and dividing the news of 2022 by quarters. And we've been listening to an excellent clip that J.P. Sears did to recap 2022. So what I'd like to do this week is take 3Q22, and that means third quarter of 2022, and just listen to what JP had to say for that crazy chaotic time that spanned the July to September time frame of last year. And folks, this is what we were doing and dealing with last summer. So let's have a look.
Democracy is not perfect. It's never been good.
That sums up 2022 pretty well.
Good evening and welcome to our Year in Review special report. 2022 was the year that we normalized drag shows for kids. We're making our ancestors proud as we complete year 3 of the first 15 days to slow the spread. 2022 has been the incestuous birth child of mother corruption and her brother gaslighting. It's been a magnificent year thanks to our benevolent globalist leaders that signed my paycheck while enriching your life with premium levels of inflation, unifying levels of division, satiating levels of food shortages, and a securely wide open border. We'll also fondly remember 2022 as the year that young people started dying suddenly from a condition known as died suddenly. So tonight, we're going to take a nostalgic walk down memory lane to re-traumatize you with the top stories from 2022. The year started with a frog sitting in a pot of hot water on the stove. Where did the frog end up? Stay tuned to find out. And not much happened in July. Just the Dutch farmers started a massive protest because they still want to be able to grow what's called food. These fascist farmers chose to resist the Green New Deal orchestrated by the World Economic Forum that wants to shut down their farms because, scientifically speaking, starvation helps fight climate change. Well, farmers, guess who's getting a poor social credit score? Little do the farmers know, Santa Klaus Schwab is always watching, and he's making a list, and he's checking it twice. And we'll just skip Independence Day because it hurts our cause. And in July, we also declared monkeypox an emergency. But unfortunately, no one gave a shit about the boy crying wolf this time. But through great scientific investigation, it was discovered that 95% of monkeypox cases were coming from gay orgies. The gay community responded by continuing to have gay orgies. Though the recommended guidelines of having sex with no more than 15 people at a time continue to be in place. July also saw a conspiratorial ginger appear on Tucker Carlson. Gingers definitely don't have souls. Right, Jen?
We'll circle back with you directly.
Yeah, just let me know when you figure it out. Moving on to August. August saw our national security take a big step forward in reducing the security of our nation when the FBI raided Trump at Mar-a-Lago. After the FBI agents were done sniffing Melania's underwear, masturbating into Trump's socks, and giving each other handjobs while admiring each other's mustaches, the nation had more peace knowing that the weaponized federal agency was protecting us from domestic patriots. And in September, as summer was winding down, the heat was elevating in Iran when the ruling regime killed a young lady for not wearing her face covering properly for her protection. Fauci reportedly experienced unprecedented levels of envy, given that he's never received the green light to directly kill people for not wearing their face coverings correctly. But in Iran, the events sparked off never-before-seen protests against the authoritarian regime. But in the name of preserving democracy, the regime responded to the protesters by sentencing over 15,000 of them to death. With regard to the atrocities, liberals in the U.S. wisely comforted each other by reminding themselves something like that could never happen here. This just in! Believing that could never happen here is exactly what it takes for something like that to happen here. And that's exactly what we want, so please keep believing that. Later in September, the nation then enjoyed the lovely fall colors of deep blood red and black that were on display at Hunter's dad's speech in Philadelphia. You probably remember it as a deeply unifying speech where Biden labeled half the country as dangerous extremists who threaten our democracy. September also saw the passing of Queen Elizabeth, along with DeSantis passing illegal immigrants into the open, loving, accepting arms of compassionate liberals in Martha's Vineyard, who then, in the name of equity, immediately ejected the immigrants out of there as fast as they possibly could. In October, the
if that wasn't true, you'd say it was sick, but it was true. Everything JP talked about there happened. And when you put this together and think about all the crazy things that are going on in this world today, it just blows your mind. You know, back when I got into this in the 90s and did research for William Cooper at the Hour of the Time, we were having a good week if we had two of these stories in a month. Now we're having them every day. I was exaggerating there. We would take one story and just build upon it and build upon it and build upon it. Now, all you can do is list these items. They're so crazy. And then it's moving at such a rapid pace. We have to keep moving. Last week, in our Back to the Future segment, we covered the Younger Dreyas event that happened about 12,850 years ago. You know, the comet strike. We talked how it could possibly be the events found in God's timeline, also known as history, or the story of Jesus, or the Word, or as I simply call it, his story. Now, specifically, the events in this period are covered in Genesis chapters 4 through 6, where we learn about the world before the Noahic flood. Now, I think Bishop Usher did a great disservice to the Bible and the timeline of his story, God's story, history, when he said that Adam and Eve were in the garden 6,000 years ago. that just doesn't follow everything we see. And so people disparage the word of God. People say, oh, it's not true. Because one man made some mistakes concerning the timeline. But I believe these events covered in Genesis 4 through 6 happened about 12,850 years ago. And then we tied it to Graham Hancock's new Netflix series, Ancient Apocalypse. We listened to the trailer. So let's have a re-listen. And isn't it curious, but this trailer from Netflix is exactly 33 seconds long.
Did you know that you were picking a fight with academia? Because there's a lot of people that just don't want to hear this.
You have been at the front of the line for decades, and you exposed me to a lot of these controversial ideas that have now been substantiated.
Well, I'm Graham Hancock. I don't claim to be an archaeologist or a scientist. I am a journalist, and the subject that I'm investigating is human prehistory.
Now, these ideas, folks, they're controversial because they're exposing the Nephilim. Some people call them the Anunnaki, ancient aliens. Call them whatever you want, folks. But these are the Canaanites. These are the deep, dark people, the gods of Greece. Call them whatever you want. But they are in the final stages of their subjugation of humanity. And they're shaking their angry fists at God right now. Keep that in mind, folks. We've been lied to concerning history. Now, just this week, Brother Alex sends me this YouTube video titled The Lost City of Atlantis, Hidden in Plain Sight, Lost Ancient Human Civilizations. And it was produced by Jimmy Corsetti over in his channel called Bright Insight on YouTube. Now, he published this on September 4th, 2018, and now it has close to 5 million views. So let's have a listen to what I'll call the intro to this excellent YouTube documentary.
Not only did the lost city of Atlantis actually exist, but its true location has been hiding in plain sight for thousands of years, completely unnoticed, as we've been looking in all the wrong places for its location since everyone assumes that it must be under the ocean somewhere, such as in the depths of the Atlantic Ocean or the Mediterranean Sea, which have long been considered to be the most likely places for its existence. And no, I am not about to suggest that Antarctica is the hidden location of Atlantis either. Because in this video, I'm going to use the exact words that Plato used to describe Atlantis, its location, and the geographical land features that surround it, which were recorded in Plato's dialogues, the Critias and the Timaeus. And many people are not even aware that the information contained in Plato's writings of Atlantis actually originate from the ancient Egyptians. And the details that Plato shared of Atlantis, which I'm about to share with you in a side-by-side comparison, will show you that the Rakart structure located in Mauritania, Africa, also commonly referred to as the Eye of the Sahara or the Eye of Africa, which most people have never even heard of, by the way, is the most likely location for the lost city of Atlantis as it matches so many precise details of what Plato wrote. But it must first be mentioned that according to mainstream academics and historians, the legend of Atlantis is simply fictional and has been commonly referred to as a myth or even pseudo-history, which completely contradicts Plato and Solon, which described an empire referred to as Atlantis, which was known for being technologically advanced, with noble and powerful people possessing vast wealth, luxury, and knowledge, and even military superiority, and is described as being destroyed in a single day and night of misfortune, which caused the island of Atlantis to disappear into the depths of the sea, related to a massive earthquake and likely a tsunami. So first things first, Plato received all the information about Atlantis from Solon, who was his ancestral relative separated by six generations. Solon was born in Athens, Greece, some 2,600 years ago, and was an Athenian statesman, lawmaker, and poet, remembered particularly for his efforts to legislate against political corruption and economic and social decline in Athens. He was known to be a person of wisdom and outstanding character. In Solon's later years, he traveled to Egypt in the search of knowledge, and Egypt at that time had the longest documented historical records available. And he visited Nice Temple at Sais, where he learned of the history of Atlantis from a high Egyptian priest who translated the hieroglyphs that were carved into stone within the temple, which also described that Egypt was once a colony of the Empire of Atlantis. And Nice's temple no longer exists today, as it was destroyed long ago when it was consumed by what is now the Nile Delta swamplands. However, thanks to Solon's detailed notes, the information was retained and kept for six generations within Plato's family before it was published by Plato himself in the Critias and the Timaeus dialogues approximately 2,400 years ago. So one of the first things to point out is the supposed date of Atlantis' destruction according to what Solon had learned while visiting Egypt, which was that the event that destroyed the lost city had occurred 9,000 years earlier, which is a very interesting time frame, considering that Solon visited Egypt 2,600 years ago. And 9,000 years plus 2,600 years equates to 11,600 years before present time today, which just so happens to coincide with the Younger Dryas climate catastrophe, which of course I've discussed in many other videos. Long story short, to anyone that's not familiar or new to the channel, there was a massive change in global temperatures, sea levels fluctuated, a massive extinction event of 75% of mammals in North America occurred. There's even evidence of global fires said to have been larger than the ones that occurred during the extinction event that killed off the dinosaurs, scorching at least 10% of the Earth's land surface. The evidence for this event is scientifically overwhelming and is likely related to a fragmented comet. And the point is that it's very likely that this event is related in some way to the destruction of Atlantis. And for more details, I highly recommend you look into the brilliant work of Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock.
So there you have it, folks. Let's start putting the pieces of the puzzle together. Now, I'm going to say this. I didn't hear this from anyone else, but this is my conclusion after about 30 years of studying all this dark craziness. Folks, I believe this city known as Atlantis and others, you know, we have the Minoans and others, and, you know, the island of Crete, these cities were the cities built by the men of renown from the Bible, the Nephilim, the offspring of the sons of God and the daughters of man, the giants. Now, many people say, oh, Ken, that's just mythology. No, it's not. Just like a lot of people say, well, the Rikert site, the Eye of Sahara, that Jimmy was talking about, it's not Atlantis because, come on, it was a naturally occurring formation. Well, let's think rationally for a minute here, folks. And by the way, Jimmy Corsetti discusses this in part two of his documentary, and you can get it out on his YouTube channel, Bright Insight. And I recommend you go out there, got his info. It's excellent. So why couldn't the Rikert formation be natural and still be Atlantis? Think about it. Civilizations have settled on natural geological land features throughout history. Look at Rome, the city of seven hills. And even today, we have massive cities. Look at the valley, the desert valley out in Phoenix, Arizona, that encompasses Scottsdale, Chandler, Mesa, and Phoenix proper. It's a desert valley. And this incredible civilization just developed there. Now, I think in the future, once the infrastructure collapses, archaeologists of 500 years from now, their heads and say, why did people build this massive civilization known as Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, in the middle of a desert? Good question, eh? But the point is that man has built cities on natural formations since the beginning of time. Just consider the massive dimensions of Atlantis, which, by the way, correlate exactly with the Rikert site. And then just do the math on the circumference of the three inner circles of water that Plato and many others have described as the major feature of Atlantis. Just imagine how much digging and dredging that would require. Occam's razor says it's obvious that it would make sense for Atlantis to have been built on a natural formation such as this. And stay tuned, because we're going to have much more on this in our Back to the Future segment. But right now, folks, we have to keep moving. I'm looking at the clock. And it's time for Sister Kathy's and Brother Alex's Freaky Deaky News Update. as we do each and every week. Let's get started with our coronavirus heist update. Yeah, we are. We are being scammed by the Nephilim, by the Anunnaki, by the Men of Renown, whatever you want to call them, folks, the deep state, the Luciferians, the Sabbateans. We're being scammed. Now, as we do every week, let's get into this portion of the show with our sudden adult death syndrome update. Now, folks, these reports aren't slowing down. In fact, they're increasing in frequency and, may I add, in tragedy. So there was a 35-year-old middle school coach and teacher drops dead in front of his class after suffering from a heart attack. So this teacher was from the Divine Independent School District, died suddenly of a heart attack after collapsing in front of his students this January. His name was Jacob Sanchez, 35, of Bigfoot, Texas. He died suddenly in the classroom on January 5th. Now, this poor guy, he did his part, folks, and Pfizer did their part, too. You know, I was thinking about it. It must be really scary for the vax now to know that 2 years after your last jab, you might be dead of a heart attack when you're not even 35 years old. Sad, isn't it? Really sad. Now, you know what, folks? We have to stop and bring you a word from our sponsor.
This year, get her the one thing she's been waiting for. The COVID-19 vaccine from Pfizer. Don't just be her somebody. Be her antibody. Because the quickest way to the heart is a syringe. Inoculate yourselves with love. The COVID-19 vaccine from Pfizer.
Just had to throw some humor in, folks. Here's another SAGE report. This was a fashion model, Jeremy Ruhlman, dead at 27. So the sudden death of a healthy young American model has just left the fashion industry in mourning. He died away last Sunday. 6'2", healthy man from New Jersey, 27 years old. And the cause of his death right now is unknown. Now, he was part of the Soul Artist Management Group, and Jason Kanner, CEO of the group, shared this tragic news on his death on Instagram. And guess what? It's been confirmed that Jeremy Ruhlman was vaxxed. But not only vaxxed, he was a vax advocate, just like the teacher from Texas, Jacob Sanchez. Now, sadly, and no pun intended with that, folks, there's a lot of people who are glad to hear these SAGE reports, because both of the ones we just covered today were SAGE deaths of people who told us either take this injection or there's no job, no health care, and no life-saving surgeries. These were the libtard types out there, the social influencers, advocating that unvaxxed be sent to COVID camps, injected, and re-educated. Now, although it's not right to celebrate anyone's death, and I do understand why people do. I do, folks. So Operation Warp Speed strikes again, huh? It's sickening. Now, we all heard the Diamond from the dynamic duo of Silk and Diamond. Diamond died suddenly, and Silk had a memorial service that former President Trump even attended. And so Silk is standing up there, and I'm going to play this next clip for you, where Silk explains Diamond's sudden adult death event as President Trump sits there. It's irony, folks. You can't make this stuff up. Listen to this 3-minute clip.
As soon as Diamond hung up the phone, she said to me, "I can't breathe." It was suddenly, out of nowhere, and no warning. I got her to the kitchen table, opened up the back door so that she can get some air. And each breath was less and less and less until her eyes became a stare. My husband and I followed the 911 instructions from the lady. We laid her, like they told us, to lay her flat. They said, do CPR, and it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. My husband and I alternated and kept going and going and going until the emergency truck came into the yard and the EMS came into the house. They did everything that they could. So what I want to say to everybody is don't you dare call me a conspiracy theorist, because I saw it happen. I saw how it happened. I was there when it happened, and it happened suddenly. I want America to wake up and pay attention. Something ain't right. It's time to investigate what's really going on here and get some answers to why are people falling dead suddenly. And another thing, instead of asking if Americans are vaxxed or unvaxxed, the real question to ask is, are Americans being poisoned? In the wild, when they want to depopulate and sterilize a large group of animals, they usually inject one animal, and then that one animal infects the rest of the animals. So technically, and according to the science, it doesn't matter if you're vaxxed or not. As long as the gain of function allows one injected person to transfer and infect another person, and that person infects another person, eventually everyone will be affected in one way or the other. So, in case some of you have been hiding under a rock or still stuck in denial, people are dropping dead around here. And nobody's talking about it. They're dropping dead suddenly and unexpectedly. The catchphrase is SAD, S-A-D, sudden adult death syndrome. Many call it a conspiracy theory. I call it murder.
Two words, or actually three, suddenly and unexpectedly. Remember I shared on the show here the passing of my mother-in-law, Stella, who died on January 8th. 2.5 months, folks, after her second booster. This was an otherwise healthy, independent living 89-year-old woman with no health issues other than AFib, which was being managed very well. She gets that jab. She starts getting these incredibly swollen legs. She's got liver function issues. She's got kidney function issues. She's got congestive heart failure. And we thought that was all under control, when on Sunday, around 1:55, my mother-in-law dies suddenly with Terry and our niece sitting there. Folks, this isn't going away. But not only is it going to be passed by shedding, like Silk was talking about, but now they're putting it in our food. And then just this week on InfoWars, Dr. Mike Yeadon was talking with Alex Jones. Now, I don't have time to play this clip this week, But Dr. Michael Yaden, a former executive from Pfizer, is pulling out all stops and saying this is an all-out war on humanity. And the question is, why and by whom? Tune for that answer and Back to the Future, folks. But right now, we have to keep moving, and it's time for our Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater in Japanese. Ka means salt. Bu means dance. Ki means steal from the verb. Kabu means to slam or to sway. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flatten the curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad. Must go. Good is bad. Bad is good. Up is down. Light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Folks, I'm telling you, this, what we're living through right now, is a multifaceted war on we the people by these Luciferian World Economic Forum globalists, hell-bent on destroying us for their demonic overlords, the fallen angels who are trying or about to seat their lord, the Antichrist. Now, I know all this sounds a bit crazy, but stay with me here, because as they attack our health, they're also attacking our national sovereignty and our laws and our food supply and our money system and our faith. In fact, they're even attacking our environment. You know, the very cry they utter to save our planet is actually destroying it. They are. And you remember what we talked about last week with John Kerry saying that they've been contacted by aliens?
What? What? Are you serious? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
Yeah, Paul, I'm serious. You don't remember John Kerry talking about his ET speculation? Folks, those are the fallen angels. Listen to John Kerry.
And when you stop and think about it, it's pretty extraordinary that we, select group of human beings, because of whatever touched us at some point in our lives, are able to sit in a room and come together and actually talk about saving the planet. I mean, it's so almost extraterrestrial to think about, quote, saving the planet. And if you said that to most people, they think you're just a crazy tree-hugging, lefty, liberal, you know, do-gooder, whatever, and there's no relationship. But really, that's where we are.
Well, that's what they're doing, folks. They're scamming us. There's a great article over at the CO2coalition.org written by the executive director of the coalition, Gregory Wrightstone, and it's titled 97% Consensus, What Consensus? Now, you've probably all heard that there's 97% of all scientists out there agreeing on this human-driven climate change. And well, that's a lie, folks. And soon we're going to see that it's not even a half-faced lie. Plus, you may have heard that those who don't buy into this climate change apocalypse, I mean scientists like me, are actually science deniers. Another bald-faced lie, folks. The truth is that there's a whole lot more than 3% of all scientists that are skeptical of this party line on climate. And I'm telling you, folks, a whole lot more. Now, here's how the deep state, the Luciferians, the Sabbateans, the Anunnaki, whatever you want to call them, have pulled it off. Now, many scientists, engineers, and energy experts that comprise this CO2 coalition that I'm talking about right now, they're often ask these loaded questions, these numbers. Remember, the devil's in the details, folks. So something like this is asked to the scientists, and I've been asked this. So do you believe in climate change? Now, if you answer yes, of course I do. It's been happening for hundreds of thousands of years. They're going to put you down as somebody who subscribes to the current narrative, and that's nothing but a lie. The point is, it's very important to ask the right questions. So the question isn't, is climate change happening? Because it's always been happening. The real question is right here is climate change now being driven primarily by anthropomorphic actions or human actions? And then that question should be followed up with another question. And that question is our changing climate beneficial or harmful to the ecosystem and humanity? Now, there's some scientific truths here that are quantifiable and easily proven. And I'm confident that at least 95% of the scientists out there, including myself, would agree with these two next comments. CO2 concentrations have been increasing over the last so many number of years. Temperatures, as measured both by satellites, and those are low orbit satellites, folks, and thermometers, have been showing an increasing rise in temperature for about the last 150 years. Now, we didn't have satellites 150 years ago, but we did have very good, accurate, precise thermometers. So what is impossible, though, is to quantify the actual percentage of warming that can be attributed to human-caused CO2 increases. And then the bigger question is that bad or good for the environment? And that's because there's no scientific evidence or method that can determine how much of the warming that we've had since 1900 has been directly caused by man. And like I mentioned before, if we're melting all of the ice caps and all the icebergs, wouldn't we see a change in the appearance of the Statue of Liberty or Plymouth Rock or some of these other coastal geographic features that we have photographs over the last 150 years of? Well, when you look at old photos and recent photos, there's no change in sea level. Now, we do know for a fact that temperatures vary greatly over the millennia. We also know that for virtually all of time, global warming and cooling are driven entirely by natural forces, which, by the way, didn't stop operating during the Industrial Revolution. So this is an absurd claim that's being foisted upon us by the establishment, the deep state, the Luciferians, call them whatever you want, trying to attribute human activities to what's happening in the environment, and then blaming it on all the rich countries. And the truth is, folks, we simply do not know. And as scientists, and I'm including myself here, we must be able to separate what we do know from that which is only conjecture. So what's the basis of this 97% consensus notion there in the current narrative? Is it true? That's the big question, folks. Now, here's something about that word, consensus. Just think about the word for a minute. What's it begin with? Well, this whole notion of a consensus begins with the word con.
What?
That's right, Paul. Think about it. Consensus. Con. So is it a con job? Go all the way back to the Rio Summit and Maurice Strong. Remember I talked about him, and I've been looking for that clip. It was on the Corbett Report. He did a series on big oil and how they were going to push this narrative. And this goes all the way back to the Pilgrim Society of the early 20th century. I can't find a clip. I'm going to probably have to dig it back up from the original source, put it together, and then post it so we can play it. But I did find one from Glenn Beck on Maurice Strong. Now, remember what we just heard John Kerry say? And let's listen to Glenn Beck talking about Maurice Strong. This is about a 2-minute and 16-second clip.
And Maurice Strong is a guy who is UN central and surprisingly involved in almost everything. This is what he said in 1990 in an interview. He said, "What if a small group of these world leaders were to conclude that the principal risk to the earth comes from the actions of rich countries? In order to save the planet, this group decided, isn't the only hope for the planet that the industrialized civilizations collapse? Isn't it our responsibility to bring that about?" Okay, let me just go over a few of these things. So what we're looking, this is a what if, and remember, what we're talking about is a novel that has never been written all these many years later, and he's never written one, but it's a good novel. But words have power. We're looking for a small group of people. They've got to be global, a small global group of people. They have to believe, this small group of people, that there's a threat to the earth, a principal threat to the earth, which is that rich countries are the problem. A risk to the earth, and that risk is rich countries. Then they also have to believe that this group, they see this risk, and it's coming from the rich countries, and the best thing they can do, the only hope, is for the planet to collapse the industrialized civilization. Okay? So they have to collapse the system. Wouldn't it be our responsibility to bring that about? Okay, why would it be their responsibility to bring that out? Well, if you can't convince people of these things, then you've got to do it in a different way. And if you do it in a different way, then that means you need control. This is the thesis for what I'm going to be laying out, a little bit of it tonight, but over the next week. And America, you're not going to believe how all of the pieces fit. It is terrifying. And it is more than Crime, Inc. Holy cow. Okay.
And when you stop and think about it, it's pretty extraordinary that we, select group of human beings, because of whatever touched us at some point in our lives, are able to sit in a room and come together and actually talk about saving the planet. I mean, it's so almost extraterrestrial to think about, quote, saving the planet. And if you said that to most people, they think you're just a crazy tree-hugging, lefty, liberal, you know, do-gooder, whatever, and there's no relationship. But really, that's where we are.
Now, I hope I caught all of your attentions along with Paul's, and I encourage all of you to go out to co2coalition.org and read this excellent article by Executive Director Gregory Whitestone, 97% consensus. What consensus? Folks, this is a huge, huge con job. And while you're at it, go out and check the Corbett Report and look in particular at the excellent documentaries he has out there on big oil and climate change. Folks, I'm telling you, we are being conned. And the people behind this for the global overlords, destroy humanity, and seat their master, the Antichrist. Now, do you remember this quote? It goes back to the Nazi regime of Hitler, Joseph Goebbels. If you tell a big lie, or let me start again. If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. And you know, folks, from the information we just reviewed, the percentage of scientists who agree with the notion of a man-made catastrophic global warming is significantly less than being advertised. You know, there have been several unbiased attempts made to assess what the actual number might be, and one of the largest petitions out there concerning climate change is known as the Oregon Petition. It was signed by more than 31,000 American scientists. And among those, there's over 9,000 holding PhDs. And they all dispute this notion of anthropomorphic climate alarmism. Oh, and by the way, I'm one of those PhDs. I disagree with the official narrative, or should I call it a lie? Or you want to be a little more gentle? Call it a con job. That's what it is. I'd like to read this quote for you from Michael Crichton. And here it is, and this is very powerful. Let's be clear. The work of science has nothing whatsoever to do with consensus. Consensus is the business of politics. Science, on the contrary, requires only one investigator who happens to be right. And by the way, folks, I've told you this story time and time again, that when I was doing my graduate degree back in the 80s, at the University of Pittsburgh, and I was doing some of the work of Pons and Fleshman, the two that published the cold fusion information back in the 90s. I actually observed that in the laboratory. And I was told my advisor, who was funded by Gulf Oil Company, to back off or I'll never get my degree. So let's continue with this quote. Science, on the contrary, requires only one investigator who happens to be right. And I was right back then. I confirmed the work of Pons and Fleshman. And Buick was also in there before it was even released to the public. So it takes one investigator who happens to be right, which means that he or she has results that are verifiable by reference to the real world. In science, consensus is irrelevant. What is relevant is reproducible results. And I reproduce their results, folks. The greatest scientists in history are great precisely because they broke with consensus. There is no such thing as consensus science. If it's consensus, it isn't science. If it's science, it isn't consensus, period. If you have consensus in science, what you really actually have, folks, is scientism. Now, there are some other references from this article I'd encourage you to check out. So go to that article over at co2coalition.org and just read it, digest it. It's important, folks. So be sure to read those other references at the end of the article. Plus, there's a good writer over at Substack named Doomberg and another one called Alex Epstein. Check them both out. And get this, folks. The truth is that the current atmospheric CO2 levels are actually too low, not too high. You can't make this stuff up, folks. If we want to have healthy flora and fauna, which is essential for life on Earth, we actually need CO2 levels to be a little higher than they actually are right now. Did you know that, folks?
Really?
That's right, Alvin, really. So our CO2 levels right now are actually too low, and they're trying to actually drive them down lower. So if you want to support carbon-based life forms on planet Earth, by the way, we're carbon-based. But if you want to support that type of life form on Earth, you actually need more CO2. So I'm going to call it PSYOP climate change. Now, there's a really good article out there by the second smartest guy in the world, and it's titled The Absurd CO2 Scam. And he's basically confirming what I just told you. The lowest CO2 levels in the last 175 million years of history, if you look at geologic data. So these global temperatures that we're talking about, they actually follow rather than leading on CO2 levels. And a lot of people don't understand that. So what's happened in the world today, folks, is that we're actually distorting cause and effect. And we're making the effect the cause and the cause the effect.
Gosh, holy, holy, gosh.
That's right, Gomer. But it's really no surprise when you realize that we're in this asymmetrical, multifaceted, unconventional war that's attacking not only our environment, but our health, our food supply, our national sovereignty, our rights, and more on rights, folks, in Ken's Corner. Plus, this war is attacking our money supply, our faith, and basically everything it means to be human. So the big point here, and this is what I want to leave you with, because I'm spending a lot of time on this today. The big point here is that CO2 in this pollutant narrative is a bald-faced lie. Just like a dozen other mainstream narratives, like there is no election fraud, the vaccines are safe, Biden's a good guy. There's no criminality behind him and his son, Hunter. These are all lies that we, the people, are being fed. We're being gaslit, folks. Oh, and one more thing. There's a video out there that's worth a watch, which is as timely as ever. So check it out. It's on Tony Heller's YouTube channel, and it's called My Gift, Climate Alarmists. This is one of the most concise exposés on the climate fraud I've found. Maybe we'll play it next week, folks. What do you think? I'm circling it, so we're going to go to Tony Heller, YouTube. Maybe we'll play that next week. But the video is short, and it cuts right to the heart of the matter. So wrapping this all up before we move on, not only has there never been a 97% consensus among the scientists on human-driven climate change, but all the assertions were either purposely or ignorantly dishonest. And it sounds just like the entire COVID scandemic narrative, folks, from the origin of this pathogen all the way through to the safety and efficacy of the mRNA experimental jabs. You know, this is so big, folks, and it applies to so much more than just the environment and health. It applies to history, religion, money, and just about everything else the establishment tries to tell us. Plus, any scientist out there who actually believes such nonsense about climate change is either dependent upon or is measurably impacted by the exceedingly micro, minimal, and puny proportion of man's activities. So what I'm trying to say, boiling it down to simplicity, when you look at anthropomorphic climate change and what we, little man, can do on this massive world, and compare it to the immense power of natural cycles like volcanoes and the sunspot activity and weather patterns that aren't being controlled by man, we're like these little ants that you and me might be sitting there playing with our magnifying lens and burning the ants. You know, these types of goofy scientists would benefit from psychoanalysis sessions or just a sudden moment of common sense, or as we call it here on SDG, critical thinking. But I'm babbling now. I do have to find that Corbett report on Maurice Strong. Oh, and one more thing on scientific consensus. This stinking thinking can also be applied to the psyop known as evolution. You know, within my Christian world, I do know a handful of scientists, brilliant scientists with PhDs, who question the logic, the methodology, and the conclusions drawn by their blue-pilled evolutionary contemporaries. There's so many of them out there, folks, that have essentially proven evolution is a lie. And oh, by the way, it goes back to Darwin and his granddaddy, Erasmus. This is all part of On Becoming, another one of these esoteric, exoteric type of teachings create global domination. But you hear people saying things like, the conclusions are correct, but we just need to keep looking until we find the evidence. They use that in so many of these false narratives. Or they'll say things like, logically, such and such cannot occur, but given enough random chances over millions and billions of years, then it could have occurred. Therefore, it must have occurred. You know what that is? That's the soft pillow lazy thinkers lay their head upon. Now, there's a good documentary series that sheds lights on the difference between what the scientific literature can demonstrate based on data collected versus the conclusions that are taught in these BS biology books that are being foisted upon our high school and college students. And you can check this out over at foundationsrestored.com. Another very good site, folks. Oh, and one more comment on climate change and the psyop behind it. You know, our sun creates these cyclical disasters about every 12,000 years. Isn't that amazing, huh? It's called the Gothenburg effect or event. And this happened about the same time the Younger Dryas period happened, about 12,000 years ago. And folks, I'm telling you, this is an excellent segue into our next and newest segment, Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow, 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 follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick, follow the Yellow Brick, follow the Yellow Brick Road. wonderful river of love. You'll find it in the river of wind, if ever a river was. If ever a river of wind there was, the river of love is one because of the wonderful things he does. You're off to see the river, the wonderful river of love.
Remember, the Bible tells us that the love of money, not money itself, but the love of money is the root of all evil. So even more important than this entire climate change psyop is this drive towards the central bank digital currency. And that's what will turn everyone here on earth into slaves. Now, even the New York Times getting in on it now. Listen to this, just published this week. Was it this week? I think it was the 16th. Don't quote me on that, folks, but it's the title of this article from the Wall Street Journal. It said New York Times. The Wall Street Journal's in on it too. Central bank digital currencies are coming, whether countries are ready or not. The game-changing development could have profound impact on the banking system, but few people still understand it. Have a listen.
Central bank digital currencies are coming, whether countries are ready or not. The game-changing development could have a profound impact on the banking system, but few people still understand it. By Christopher Mims. January 16, 2023, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Central bank digital currency doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but you might want to get used to saying it. These so-called CBDCs, or digital versions of dollars, yuan, euros, yen, or any other currency, are coming, say those who study them. And depending on how they are designed and rolled out, their impact on the banking system could be profound. 114 countries are exploring digital currencies, and their collective economies represent more than 95% of the world's GDP, according to the Atlantic Council's Central Bank Digital Currency Tracker. Some countries, including China, India, Nigeria, and the Bahamas, have already rolled out digital currencies. Others, like Sweden and Japan, are preparing for possible rollouts. The U.S. is studying the issue and has run trials of various technologies to enable a digital currency, although Fed Chair Jerome Powell has indicated the U.S. Central Bank has no plans to create one and won't do so without direction from Congress. Debates about the necessity, utility, and potential pros and cons of digital currencies are often confusing, and confused in part because every country rolling out a digital currency is doing it in its own way. Generally, however, CBDCs can be roughly divided into two types, those designed for use by financial institutions and those designed for use by the general public. Old versus new. To hear the full story, subscribe or sign in.
So there you have it. The Wall Street Journal's weighing in, so are the New York Times and Fox Business News. I don't have time to play the Fox Business News clip, but it was titled Central Bank Digital Currencies Are Coming, Whether Countries Are Ready or Not. Now, it goes a little deeper into what we just heard here, and Fox interviews one of the financial experts on the CBDC, and they just make it so fun. But it's anything but fun, folks. The CBDC, which doesn't tongue very easily, is going to include digital passports. You know, we heard those things as vaccine passports. And they're going to be used to track and control our carbon footprint to save the planet. You know, we just covered that scam. And they're going to use it all together to enslave humanity. Or maybe we the people could rise up and tell the Davos mob and all of their minions to shove it. You know, even Maria Z down in New Zealand is getting in on it, and she focuses in this next 1 minute and 18 second clip on the World Health Organization pandemic treaty.
The World Health Organization is attempting a global power grab by seeking to have its 194 member states adopt amendments to the international health regulations, as well as adopt a completely new international agreement commonly referred to as the proposed pandemic treaty. This will apply to Australia. The proposed amendments would make the WHO's proclamations legally binding for our country rather than just advisory recommendations. they've used words such as punishment and forced vaccinations for people and countries that don't comply in future. These changes would institute global digital health certificates, also known as vaccine passes, enable the WHO to enforce medical procedures, injections, force people to submit to regular testing, dramatically increase the billions of dollars available to the WHO, and enable nations to implement the regulations without the respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of people. In fact, they've actually crossed those words out in their proposed amendments, indicating that they will not consider those things in future pandemic responses.
So there you have it from Maria Z, folks. I'm telling you, this is an all-out war on humanity. They're attacking our food, our money, our faith, our law, our sovereignty, our freedom, our rights. And it's all going to be under this fourfold control system that Ray Horvath, the source over at Substack, talked about. It's going to include our health card, which Maria just talked about, a universal basic income, which they take and give based on our compliance. Another portion, maybe it's going to be the same card, but it'll be the CO2 allocations. And finally, our social credit score. So we got to be compliant little slaves, or they're going to take our universal basic income from us. The only thing about Bill Sweet was that he wanted you to give him money. I don't buy that part of it. So check out Ray Horvath, the source, over at Substack, and you can learn more. But right now we have to keep moving, and it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. Hey, Henrietta. Hey, we got some really alarming news today, Henrietta. Tractor Supply chicken feed may be causing egg laying to stop. Okay, calm down. Calm down, Henrietta. There's one other thing, Henrietta. The Tractor Supply Board has ties to the World Economic Forum and Jeffrey Epstein. That's got the whole flock worked up here now. Now, Tractor Supply, and by the way, folks, I've noticed this with my flock, I don't know, about a year ago, and I've been feeding them Producer's Pride chicken feed for a long time. It's good to stay on the same feed. But Tractor Supply actually produces that and sells it. And there's been some claims out there now that it's been altered, and the new formulation's causing chickens to stop laying eggs. Some suggest there's been a deliberate reduction in the amount of protein, and Mike Adams is out there. He's going to do an analysis of it. But the one thing Mike Adams failed to mention that he's going to test is the protein level, and protein levels are so crucial egg production. And that's what I want to share with you a little bit later. Now, of course, Henrietta and her girls do lay fewer eggs in the winter, and if you want to increase that, you need to add light and some heat to the coop. So the cooler temperatures and the reduced sunlight time reduce egg production. So farmers, if you want to get more production, heat the coop and light the coop. Yet there are these sources out there claiming that the Tractor Supply Producer's Pride product is causing a severe reduction, or actually a stoppage, to all egg production. Now here's where it gets a little dicey. We've seen egg prices go from about a buck to maybe a buck 50, sometimes $2 a dozen, up to over $7 a dozen today. And in my area of the country, it's still fairly low. I just picked some eggs up on Wednesday at $3.57 a dozen because my coop and the girls in the coop quit laying. But anyways, long story short, this is a $5 billion per year industry. And Tractor Supply is a $13 billion a year sales company. And their board of directors, headed by Hal Lawton, which is based in Nashville, Tennessee, and listed, like I said, with 46,000 employees in over 2,000 locations in 49 of the 50 states, has all sorts of ties to the World Economic Forum and even Jeffrey Epstein. Now, Tractor Supply's board of directors has 10 members, and one of them is Joy Brown. That's a former executive from Vanguard, you know, Vanguard and BlackRock. Vanguard alone controls $5 trillion of assets. Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street, basically controlling the economy. And another member is Thomas Kingsbury. And he bragged about implementing ESG initiatives while he was the executive over at Kohl's. And another board member from Tractor Supply is Andre Hawks. He's a former executive of ConAgra who's into the GMOs. And a little bit more on GMO at the end of this. And there's one other board member, folks, president of Victoria's Secret from 2003 to 2007. Now, Victoria's Secret is owned by Leslie Wexner. And during this time period, the New York Times reported that Jeffrey Epstein had a power of attorney document that allowed him to basically run Victoria's Secret. So he could hire and fire and manage all of Wexner's employees and manage all of the finances of Victoria's Secret. So the Gateway Pundit, they reach out to the CEO of Tractor Supply. They reach out to the corporate media offices. And they also reach out to the FDA. And no one got back to them. So what's the lesson here? Well, first of all, we need to stop shopping at these big box stores, including the ones for folks like me that live out in the country. And I'm guilty of it, folks. And one of the reasons is it's the closest one to me, and I have to drive another 15 miles to go to the local one, which is Apollo Milling. I also have one over in Worthington. Both of these mills are local, and they produce materials locally. Now, you can still get your chicks from Tractor Supply, but a better alternative is Rural King. That's owned and operated privately by a Christian family. So if you do have a Rural King and I have to drive to Butler to get to one, I'd suggest you start buying your feeds there. Now, speaking of ConAgra and the GMO corn, I've been keeping chickens for about 35 years, and I used to buy scratch feed, and it has all sorts of different grains in it, from wheat to oats to cracked corn. Throw that on the ground, and the first thing the chickens used to go after was the cracked corn. And then they'd eventually eat all the other grains, and they'd scratch the dry soil. And that's why they name it scratch feed. And I'm thinking about 15, maybe 10 years ago, when suppliers were switching over to the GMO corn, I noticed that the chickens ate all the other grains first, and I started seeing more and more cracked corn in the scratch feed than the others. And I'd have all this cracked corn just laying on the floor of the coop, and they wouldn't eat it, so I quit buying it. So what's the alternative? Well, get your chicks over at Rural King. Try to buy your feed locally, or better yet, make your own like I used to do, and I think I'm going to get into again. Now, how do you make your own? Well, go to one of the local farmers who's selling crib corn, and you can either buy it still on the husk or on the cob, I should say, and then you can take it to the mill, and they could decob it, and then they could crack it, and then they could blend to it proteins. These are usually vegetable-based proteins. Get it from a good non-GMO soy source. Bring that protein level up to 16%, and then they have a vitamin pack they could add on a weight basis. And what you end up with is a cheap, wholesome, healthy feed for your chickens that makes and produces delicious eggs. I mean, the yolks, when you do a sunny side up, they'll stand, I'm not joking, folks, an inch high. And they're as gold as a sunset. And they are so full of flavor and so healthy and good for you. And when you make cakes and bake with it, oh, look out. You'll make the best cakes around. But I'm looking at the clock and I'm running out of time and we have to keep moving. And right now, folks, it's time for our Hopium report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
Now, I put this report in the Hopium Report because that's all it is, Hopium. Now, you've all heard about what's going on with Biden and all of his documents. And perhaps if you're paying attention, you could see that the mainstream media is actually turning on Joe Biden, the imposter in chief. Well, why is that? Because they don't need him anymore, folks. So just this week, Martha Raddatz turns on Joe Biden. And she did a piece titled, "The Search of a Sitting President's Home Dramatically Escalates the Political Fallout." So this was last Sunday on her Sunday morning show on ABC. Just have a listen.
There's no there there. Those were the president's words this week when he was asked about the classified documents found over the last few months at his Delaware residence and a private office in Washington, D.C. But this morning, it turns out there is even more there than first thought. Federal investigators from the Department of Justice seized more than half a dozen items from the president's Wilmington home on Friday, including some documents marked classified after an extensive but consensual 13-hour search of the property. The president's personal lawyer disclosed the information last night, saying some of the records were from Biden's time as senator and some from when he was vice president. The search of a sitting president's home dramatically escalates the political fallout, if not the legal problems, after the White House consistently tried to downplay the significance all week.
So there you have it. The mainstream media is turning on Joe Biden, the imposter in chief. So don't get your hopes up, folks. This doesn't mean that we're turning the tide and going back to the good old America of the days of apple pie, Chevrolet, and baseball. This is more kabuki theater. And like I said, Joe Biden has overextended his welcome with the establishment, folks. No more needs to be said here. So don't get your hopes up. We're probably going to see Biden removed by the 25th Amendment, like President Trump prophesied. But this doesn't mean that we're turning the tide. We have to keep moving. It's time for the
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
I put this story in the Absurdian Report because that's what it is. This is absurd. There's so much damning evidence that not only was the 2022 midterm stolen, especially the gubernatorial race in Arizona, where Carrie Lake had the office of governor stolen from her by the deep state operatives and Katie Hobbs. I mean, the evidence is out there. Arizona State Senator Wendy Rogers pulled together this Senate Elections Committee, and they listened to a presentation on voter irregularities and signature verification failures in Maricopa County. This was put together by We the People Arizona Alliance, and Shelby Bush delivered this presentation that I want to share with you, and this is just a little clip out of it, but here's the summary. There were over 100,000 voter registration forms with signatures that did not match the ballot envelopes. You know, this race was only lost by, 17,000? And this group also determined that 420,000 ballot affidavits had failed signature verification in the 2020 election. So twice as many, or four times as many, as what they had in the midterms. This is all out there. This is damning evidence. Yet we don't see anything being done on it. Let's have a listen to this report.
The other area I want to cover is the tabulator machines. We received, just a few weeks ago, January of 2023, the system log files from the tabulators that were used in Maricopa County on Election Day. along with the redacted CVR records. Through an analysis, we were able to determine that a quarter of a million ballot feeds misread by those tabulators. There are approximately two tabulators in every polling center, which means there were 446 tabulators with a quarter of a million voter attempt failures.
Did you hear this, folks? The evidence is overwhelming, no longer counts. And if this is not corrected, we have lost our republic. Folks, it's absurd. Since I put it in the Absurdian report, how much evidence do we need to override these corrupt judges? You know, I think some of these judges actually need to go to jail. And this is what we need to be working on. Bottom line, folks, political activists posing as judges need to go to jail. So how do we make this happen? I think we're not even looking at what can be done on these lawless BS excuses to throw out legit lawsuits. Think about it, folks. Posing as judges usually say something about this or like this when they make their rulings. Their first excuse is, we should have filed before the election. You can't wait till you have actual damages. Or they'll say, it's too late to file. The election is over. The exact contradiction to their first ruling. Or they'll say, you don't have any standing. And I love this one because this is a blind eye. I don't see any evidence because they simply refuse to look at the evidence. Look what we just talked about here, folks. This is absurd. And folks, I'm telling you, not only is it absurd, it's very, very disturbing. We are watching the fall of our republic. And I'm sorry to say, folks, nothing's going to happen. If the 2020 presidential election wasn't fixed and the 2022 election isn't fixed, think about it like this. 2020 was the test of whether they could steal the election. 2022 is the perfection of the steal. In 2024 and moving forward with all future elections, if you even want to call it that, will be manipulated and stolen without fear of repercussion or even investigation. Now, when all said and done, it may take a revolution of sorts and a couple miles of rope to straighten this all out. Bottom line, folks, do not comply. Let's keep moving, and right now, it's time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
Now, what I'd like to talk to you about today is something that I learned about probably 30 years ago. And it's the difference between a right and a privilege. Now, this was a concept I learned back in the early 90s while working for William Cooper and spending a lot of time listening to Patriot broadcasts on WWCR shortwave radio. We didn't have the benefit of this high-speed internet today. Most of the internet back then was nothing but bulletin boards that you had to call into on dial-up modems. You remember those things that sounded like a fax machine? So what is the difference between a right and a privilege? Well, I could sit here and talk to you, or I could let you listen to this clip by Oak Norton. He did a very good job. It's less than 3 minutes, and it tells you the difference between a right and a privilege in less than 3 minutes. Let's have a listen.
We seem to hear the word rights a lot lately, but what is the difference between a right and a privilege? I like to think of it this way. Let's say you're out and you take a boat trip, maybe a three-hour tour, and you crash, and it's an uncharted island, but there's inhabitants there, and they come out to greet you. And do you, as a stranger, have a right to demand that they take care of your injuries? No, you don't. If they offer, that's a privilege, and you should show some gratitude, not feel entitled to it. Therefore, health care is not a right. It's a privilege. Do you have the right to demand that they educate your children? No, that's a privilege. Do you have a right to keep your property? Yes, you do. Do you have a right to defend yourself if attacked? Yes, you do. You have a right to defend your life. Do you have a right to attack the natives and take their property? No, you don't. That's not a privilege either. That's a violation of their rights and would probably cause you to lose some of your rights like life or liberty. Do you have a right to demand to vote in their elections? Well, obviously not. Do you have a right to burn down their village because you discover that some of their ancestors enslaved some of your ancestors? Nope. Social justice is the false idea that you have a right to violate another person or their property because of your individual circumstances. This doctrine leads to societal breakdown as individuals envious of others' property or lifestyle seek to pull down and level another person instead of applying themselves and the effort necessary to overcome their personal circumstances. It's always easier to destroy than to build. Some say that personal individual rights can be modified by the government or a panel of judges. Well, if anybody has a conscience, you know this is false. Rights can't come from the government or be taken by the government. Government derives its powers of the people, by the people, from the consent of the governed, not by claiming rights that the people don't possess. Rights come from God, and if you don't believe in God, you can still feel the truth and the fairness of this scenario. We can't dominate and control each other. We can only allow everyone the freedom to choose as how they're going to act as long as their choices don't interfere with others' freedom to act. I'm Oak Norton. See you later.
Thank you, Oak. I think he did an excellent job, folks. And that's why it's so important to believe in God. Because if there's no God, then there's no rights, only privileges given to you by the government. And if the government can give you a privilege, they can take it away. So if you take this godless thinking to the nth degree, that there is no God and there are no rights, you end up thinking like George Carlin. Now, his stand-up was more like TED Talks with a lot of laughs and other quips to keep it interesting. And if you're easily offended, folks, then he's not for you. But with his atheism aside, folks, and in that area, he's just as dead wrong as Ayn Rand is. I'm a big George Carlin fan with all of his political incorrectness. He's one of my favorites because he's a thinking man. Now, I'm going to play this clip. It's about 5 minutes long. And there are profanities in it, so if you have any young listeners, please cover their ears. This is George Carlin talking about rights, not being right if someone can take them away.
There's one more item for you, the last in our civics book, rights. Boy, everyone in this country's always running around yammering about their fucking rights. I have a right, you have no right, we have a right, they don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The Three Little Pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, shit like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute. But that's all. Cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, fuck. Here we go again. Here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you. God would have been looking out for you. You know that? He wouldn't have been worried about making sure you have a gun so you get drunk on Sunday night and kill your girlfriend's parents. But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights in this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things like slavery. Just fucking slipped his mind. But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of a fucking goddamn God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom? Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last after all this time that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me. Sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious fucking rights, okay? All right. You know about it. You know about it. Yeah. In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese-American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. They had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had, right this way, into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see how sooner or later? Yeah. Sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give a fuck about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give a fuck about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible. Personally, when it comes to rights, I think one of two things is true. I think either we have unlimited rights or we have no rights at all. Personally, I lean toward unlimited rights. I feel, for instance, I have the right to do anything I please. But if I do something you don't like, I think you have the right to kill me. So where are you going to find a fairer fucking deal than that? So the next time some asshole says to you, I have a right to my opinion, you say, oh yeah, well I have a right to my opinion, and my opinion is you have no right to your opinion. Then shoot the fuck and walk away. Thank you.
So George Carlin, folks, spent 50 years making us laugh. But more importantly, he spent 50 years making us think. Now, in that first part, he had some stinking thinking because he was an atheist. But after that applause about midway through that clip, George made some very good salient points. This government doesn't care about us. It's out for their own benefit, and they're serving their overlords, the fallen angels. The Anunnaki, whatever you want to call them, the movers and shakers, there being no God and there being no rights, George is dead wrong. We do have rights and they come from God, not from man. But on the second part, where George was saying this government doesn't care about us, he couldn't have been more right on. So if you don't believe in Jesus, which I certainly hope you do, believe in something bigger than yourself. And make that abstraction the source of your rights, folks, not the government, because what the government gives, the government can take away. Oh, and one more thing. Some of that stuff from Mr. Oak, and even some of the stuff George Carlin said, reminds me of a book written by F.A. Hayek, The Road to Serfdom. I've talked about it on here before. It's a very good book, and if you haven't read it, I recommend you go and read it. But we have to keep moving, and right now it's time for Back to the Future.
the segment where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. Now, today, we're going to wind the clock back, way back, and you may already know where we're going back to. We're going back to ancient Greece, about 400 B.C., when the great philosopher Plato wrote two of his works about the time, the Crito and the Timaeus. Now, he got a lot of the information in these books from his sixth-generation great-granddaddy, Solon. And what I want to focus on today is what Plato shared with us from his family documents that were first recorded by his sixth-generation grandfather, Solon, concerning Atlantis. And I want to continue on what we opened the show up with from the Atlantis series that Brother Alex sent us. And I just forgot the name of the guy. What was his name? Jimmy Corsetti. So we had this great work written by Plato, which everybody holds Plato up in this level of high esteem, including people like C.S. Lewis. And anything that was true that Plato talked about, C.S. Lewis used to say that's part of the Tao, the T-A-O, which all pointed to the truth, Jesus Christ. So the question we have to ask is, if Plato told us all this truth, and he talked about Atlantis, why all of a sudden would Plato start lying to us? So that's where I'd like to leave it as we get into this next clip from Jimmy Corsetti on the lost city of Atlantis. Now, this is just a continuation of what I played at the beginning of the show, and thank you, Brother Alex, for this. I think this is all starting to fit together, how deep and how dark and how far back this lie foisted upon we the people actually goes. Now, this is a rather long clip. Let's just have a listen. It's about 11 minutes. Stay with me, folks.
The evidence for this event is scientifically overwhelming and is likely related to a fragmented comet. And the point is that it's very likely that this event is related in some way to the destruction of Atlantis. And for more details, I highly recommend you look into the brilliant work of Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock. But what are the odds that this date of 11,600 years ago would match so perfectly? And that's not the only thing that matches up so closely. Most notably, Atlantis was said to be made up of concentric circles, three rings of water and two of land. In fact, here are Plato's exact words. There were alternate zones of sea and land, larger and smaller, encircling one another. There were two of land and three of water, which were turned as if with a lathe, each having its circumference equidistant every way from the center. And here you can see a few animated examples of what people have created based off of Plato's description of Atlantis. Now, compare this to the Rocart structure. Just look at this. The first thing that you must understand when you see this is that this is far larger than it looks. For example, this photo right here was taken from high altitude, and what you're seeing is something around 20 miles across or 32 kilometers. And this particular photo does not even show the entire structure, which is approximately 30 miles or 48 kilometers across. And this site can really only be appreciated from space and satellite imagery as it covers a vast area. In fact, the Rocart structure wasn't even discovered until the Gemini 4 mission in 1965 and is now a common landmark utilized by astronauts. This thing was hiding in plain sight for thousands of years, but when you look at photos of it from the ground, you have no idea what you're looking at. Only from the sky can you understand that you are part of this massive structure containing circles within circles. And in this example, you can see one of the outer rings in the distance, yet from the ground, it just looks like a hill. It's remarkable at just how much it does resemble an eye, and it makes perfect sense as to why it was given the nickname of the Eye of the Sahara and the Eye of Africa. And by the way, it is located approximately 250 miles or 400 kilometers inland off the coast of West Africa in a very remote area which is rarely visited and, again, unknown to most people. What's even more fascinating than its size and shape is that scientists do not know what it is or how it was formed, although they do think that it is natural and it was first theorized to have been an impact site from a meteor, but that was ruled out as there is no evidence of an impact. In fact, scientists have never seen anything like this anywhere else throughout the entire world. The number one guess is that it was probably formed around 100 million years ago as the supercontinent Pangaea was ripped apart by plate tectonics in what is now Africa and South America. They theorize that molten rock was pushed upwards towards the surface but never made it all the way through, thus creating a dome of rock layers. And they suggest that at some point around 100 million years ago, the eye of the structure erupted, collapsing the bubble which makes up the center part of the structure, and erosion did the rest of the work to create what you see today, which is clearly heavily eroded. But this, of course, is all speculation as it cannot be proven, and again, we've never seen anything like this anywhere else throughout the world. But here's where things start to get really interesting. It just so happens that the diameter of its outer circle is approximately 23.5 kilometers, or 14.5 miles, which is basically equivalent to the size and dimensions provided by Plato when converting from stadia to modern measurements. For example, the circular island of Atlantis was described as being 127 stadia. Well, one stadia is 607 feet, and 607 feet times 127 stadia is 77,089 feet. Convert that measurement, and that is 23.5 kilometers. I measured this numerous times on Google Earth, and I got anywhere from 21 kilometers to 24 kilometers. Most of my measurements were 22 kilometers in diameter, and again, this is virtually identical to Plato's and Solon's documentation. And although my own measurements through Google Earth cannot be considered exact, it is unbelievably close. So where we're at so far is that the Rocart structure matches Plato's description of having three circles of water and two of land, which is what you would see at the Rocart based off its design if there were water flowing into it. And not only that, the diameter of the outer circles matches the size described by Plato within a very small margin, if not identical. But this next detail that Plato describes is extremely interesting. He stated, in quote, "The mountains of the island of Atlantis was celebrated for their number and size and beauty," adding that the surrounding mountains of the city flowed with rivers, and this part of the island looked toward the south and was sheltered from the north. So he is stating that the mountains were on the north side, sheltering the city to the south, which is exactly what you see at the Rocart, and the mountains are on the north side, but not only that. When you look at detailed satellite photography, you can see the evidence of multiple rivers that were spilling over the side of the mountains towards Atlantis. Can you imagine what this place looked like when it wasn't so dry? Just like Plato stated, the mountains of the island of Atlantis were celebrated for their number and size and beauty. And it's a shame that the Rocart is so remote and visited so rarely, as there are so few pictures available of the view of these mountains when standing at ground level, but I can just imagine that these mountains were lush and beautiful green with rivers and waterfalls pouring over these mountains, and the rivers were clearly there. We can see that. So it's certain that this place once looked much differently than the barren, dry desert that we see today. And this clearly matches Plato's description, and it becomes even more compelling when you consider that Plato stated that the city of Atlantis opened up to the sea at the south. Well, look at these photos, where you can see that there is an opening at the south of the Rocart structure. So if there was once water here, and if it neighbored the sea, this would further match Plato's description. I mean, doesn't this match what a waterway outlet would look like? And not only that, doesn't the entire region look like it was blasted by flowing water or a tsunami? You can see the striations in the land going from west to east from the ocean. Tell me that this doesn't look like a massive wave or a steady flow of water completely altered the terrain. And it's also worth mentioning that scientists have emphasized that the Rocart is heavily eroded, which the circular walls clearly show us. Now, consider Plato's exact words in regards to the aftermath of the cataclysm. Quote, "Atlantis is part of the Atlantic which is no longer accessible by ship. Atlantis, when sunk by the earthquake, became an impassable barrier of mud to voyagers sailing from hence to any part of the ocean." In other words, it became landlocked. Again, if this is the site of Atlantis, and if the details shared by Solon and Plato are true, and if the Rocart structure was the site of Atlantis, then it's not hard to see that perhaps a lot of sand or mud was pushed into Africa from the ocean during some sort of catastrophic event, and let's not forget the key detail that he mentioned regarding that the area surrounding Atlantis was a level plain which was smooth and even. Is this not another match when compared to the Rickard? Because here you can see multiple views and angles of it. And Plato said that Atlantis was sheltered by mountains to the north that were facing the south, and that the south part of Atlantis opened to the sea, so isn't that what we're seeing here, assuming that the ocean was once much further inland? And something else we should consider is that the sands of the Sahara actually originate from the sea, an interesting fact that many people are not aware of. And just to give you a comparison of just how massive this region is, compare it to the size of the United States. Perhaps the remnants of Atlantis are now under the Sahara Desert. Now here is another geological detail that matches Plato's description. He stated, quote, "The stone which they quarried was white, another black, and a third red," going on to say that the main city was constructed with red, black, and white rocks. This region just so happens to have endless amounts of loose rock which match these colors, particularly black and red, but we also see lighter colors mixed in with them as well. And real quick, what you're looking at are a few screenshots from an outstanding documentary titled Visiting Atlantis, which was filmed in 2011 by George S. Alexander and Natalise Rosen. And this documentary was the inspiration for my video, and I highly recommend you visit their website, visitingatlantis.com, for more details. And in fact, this video is currently only available on the Gaia Network. That documentary goes on to point out that the center island of the Rickard has fresh spring water that flows from it. And this here is a not-so-great screenshot from that documentary where the locals dug a well to prove that fresh spring water flowed from the center island of the Rickard, despite the fact that the underground water in the surrounding area is all salt water, which is interesting considering that this is 250 miles from the ocean, perhaps further evidence that this site once met the sea. This detail about the fresh spring water coming out of the center island is significant when you compare it to what Plato said. Quote, "The god Poseidon found no difficulty in making special arrangements for the center island, bringing up two springs of water from beneath the earth, one of warm water, the other of cold. And he also specifically stated that a well near the central Acropolis provided the city with fresh water." So let's take a second to consider all the details regarding the Eye of the Sahara and Plato's description of Atlantis. First, Atlantis was said to have been destroyed 11,600 years ago, coinciding precisely with the Younger Dryas climate catastrophe. It's a circular structure that would have been made up of three rings of water and two of land, which would be the case at the Rickard if it had water in it. It has a diameter of 23.5 kilometers, which matches Plato's description of it. There are mountains to the north, which also have evidence of rivers flowing over them, just as Plato described. The entire area is surrounded by a vast plain. The south opened up to the sea, which, again, if the sea were further inland, it would match the description. And if there was a tsunami that cut Atlantis off from the ocean with mud, as Plato described, then you can see in the satellite imagery how this would be possible. The center island also had fresh spring water, just as described by Plato, and despite the fact that the surrounding area has salt water underground. And the region also has black, red, and lighter color rocks. And there are other details described by Plato that I haven't even mentioned, such as that there were a great number
Sorry, I had my mic muted, folks. So there you have it from Jimmy Corsetti. The description that Plato gave of Atlantis matches with eerie detail the Eye of Africa, the Rickard structure in Mauritania, Africa. This is the Eye of the Sahara, the Eye of Africa. Call it whatever you want, folks. I'm beginning to suspect this is the lost city of Atlantis. Thank you, Brother Alex, for that great clip. So how do we apply this to what's going on right now in the news? Well, Gen 6 Productions, you know, Steve Quellum, God bless him. Back in my days on WWCR with Bill Cooper, Steve Quell was out there. And he was one of the guys I listened to back in the 90s. He's been at this for quite a while, folks. But Gen 6 Productions just put out The Lies of Men and Gods. And this is their trailer, and he kind of ties all this in. He's doing a dig, self-funded dig, with all sorts of providence and making certain that this is all documented, and they're uncovering all sorts of incredible artifacts, which are pointing gods, the Anunnaki, fallen angels, hooking up with the daughters of man and producing the giants. Have a listen.
This is quarried stone. So this gives us a clear indication this is not recent. We have 11 different types of geo-penetrating radars.
Elongated skull, straight, alien, with an exoskeleton.
Military leaders now admit there are objects flying around out there that they can't explain.
Videos which add fuel to the belief that we are not alone.
I've been here for the past 40 days investigating ancient artifacts that disclose information of extraterrestrial interaction with humans.
Does the Pentagon know more than they're saying?
100%.
Well, of course they've been lying. And we have all known they've been lying. But until last October, we didn't have someone who had worked for the program who came forward and said it.
They have a track record of half-truths, outright lies and cover-ups. And we've seen it time and time again through the decades, over and over and over.
Mankind is being prepared for the biggest deception in human history with the help and complicitness of our own governments and that of the institutionalized Catholic Church. We will soon see the world's full surrender to the alien agenda. These returning gods will be hailed as kings and saviors. Yet in reality, we've been warned about their true fallen identities and motives throughout Scripture. Those warnings will fall on deaf ears as the world welcomes them with open arms. And it will be this embracing of these fallen beings that will accelerate the end of time. Because if those days were not cut short, there would be no flesh left alive.
As we have previously documented, the Vatican has taken drastic steps in preparation for the arrival of Earth's alien saviors. However, what most people will not understand is that these new arrivals are not new at all. They are ancient fallen angels who have been biding their time until they could be revealed as mankind's alien saviors. Our archaeological team has uncovered ancient artifacts from deep within the Mexican soil. We have empirical evidence. On film, those artifacts show reptilian winged creatures that are not of this earth. From the stories that they tell, we see the same old lie. These are the lies of men and gods.
Got a giant DNA strand over here. We know that these fallen angels love to modify the human genetic code.
Through his translation of the 14 Sumerian clay tablets of Enki, author Zacharias Sitchin came to the conclusion that the Sumerians documented a tale of aliens known as the Anunnaki. According to his translation, the Anunnaki genetically manipulated Homo erectus, a precursor to the Neanderthals, and created Homo sapiens from them. In other words, through panspermia, it was Sitchin's contention that the Anunnaki made Homo sapiens, thus mankind's progenitors. The corruption effort of mankind by these evil fallen angels has not stopped in our modern 21st century. It is, in fact, accelerating at an ever-increasing end times pace. Only this time, they are corrupting whole swaths of humanity's DNA using vaccines and the COVID pandemic as cover.
mRNA technology takes a human body and transforms it into a biomedical suicide bomber that poisons itself from the inside and even poisons the people around you through shedding. It's one of the most evil technologies that's ever been produced on our planet, even more so than atomic weapons or, you know, nuclear bombs. It's when these mRNA instructions alter the chromosomes in the nuclei of your cells, and those cells begin to reproduce, then you become a chimeric hybrid organism that is something not fully human.
There is a problem with Sitchin's belief in the Anunnaki and Nibirus traversing the solar system. It comes from the fact that many scholars have vehemently disagreed with Sitchin's translation of those clay tablets. But more importantly, the ultimate source of his enlightenment was extremely questionable.
One evening, very frustrated, and I said out loud to whoever, and I said, Nephilim, I said, if you exist, please tell me, what is Nibiru? And I woke up in the middle of the night with the answer. And then everything from that morning on fell into place.
We've been in touch for about 22, 23 years. The idea of Zechariah was that Lucifer is one of these Anunnaki running this planet.
We were told by Ferramonti that although the Vatican initially disagreed with Sitchin's position on Nibiru and the Anunnaki, they later came to agree with him 100%.
They are constantly monitoring things with the Lucifer device. Now, they would not allow us to see what the Lucifer device was watching, but we were told that it was very specifically monitoring something in deep space. They were very cryptic about it. Again, seemed to be echoing what Malachi Martin had said, that they were watching a specific something that is approaching the Earth.
Given this background, it's apparent by Tom Horn and Chris Putnam's experience that Sitchin was successful in convincing the Vatican that Nibiru is coming.
Because of Zachariah Sitchin's misunderstanding of the Genesis 6 narrative and his willingness to be deceived by the fallen angels, Sitchin was launched down a dangerous path in which he would unwittingly assist modern-day Nephilim to deceive hundreds of millions of people. This is the end times great deception. Those ancient fallen angels will return to Earth masquerading as our alien saviors. And this is also the greatest supernatural setup in human history.
So there you have it, folks. Excellent, excellent documentary. And I apologize, I may have had my mute off during that. And I'm trying to help Terry get ready. Classes. So if you heard me in the background, that was me helping Terry get ready. But what can I say? This is a one-man operation here. So I encourage you to get out there and listen or watch The Lies of Men and Gods by Gen 6. And I'm telling you, folks, this is all coming together. The people that control this world are working for these fallen angels. Like I've been saying for, what, 15 years now? We need to wake up. Now, we can tie all of this into three more ominous parallels between both the days of Noah and Lot and what we're seeing today. You know, Jesus said in Luke chapter 17, verses 26 through 28, and as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives. Notice it's plural, folks. And they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But folks, last week, do you remember what we covered here? We learned that these days, these were days of secular philosophy, scientific progress, social plagues, and sexual perversion. So let's wrap this up now and look at three more ominous signs of the times that herald the soon return of Jesus. And these include selfish prosperity, the solemn preaching of godly men, and finally, the impending sudden panic.
Now, the Bible does teach that we can know the season when Jesus returns, although last week we learned that we don't know the hour and the day. But we do know from what Jesus tells us that these will be like the days of Noah. He said in Matthew chapter 24, verses 35 through 37, "Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of that day," and he's referring to his return, "the hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." So what Jesus is doing here is contrasting the fact, the truth, that we may not know the day and the hour, to the truth or the fact that we should recognize the season. And I'm telling you, this is the season, folks. As it was, so shall it be, what Jesus is saying here. Then notice his explanation in verses 38 through 39 of Matthew 24. "For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and knew not, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." So last week, like I said, we looked at the first book of the Bible, Genesis, and we focused in on chapters 4 through 6 to see what the days of Noah were actually like. And we were looking at these seven signs. Now today, monkeypox is the failed epidemic, like we heard J.D. Steer say at the beginning. The epidemic that people didn't buy into. Yet all of these different perversions and all of these different selfish ambitions are destroying the lives of so many people in the U.S. and around the world today. These vile diseases. People are saying, is this a judgment from God? Well, actually, no. They're a built-in effect of sin. The Bible says in Romans chapter 1, verse 27, "Likewise also the men, leaving the natural desire of the women, burned in their lust towards one another." Remember, J.P. Sears says that 95% of all monkeypox comes from homosexual orgies. "Men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was met." That means fitting, folks. So that says it all. So monkeypox is the due penalty of their error, their stinking thinking, so to speak. So people often ask if monkeypox or AIDS or any of these other plagues and diseases are the judgment of God. No, they're not. During the Roman decline, there was an emperor named Commodus, and one of his top advisors withheld the grain shipments from Alexandria, and it caused all sorts of death and disease. Well, that wasn't a judgment of God. That was the natural due penalty of the heir of a man who withheld the grain supply to Rome for selfish ambition. And that's because the sin of another can sometimes lead to the woe of another. So if we get back to God's plan concerning marriage, if we get back to God's plan concerning justice and right living, these epidemics, these pandemics, these scamdemics would evaporate overnight. The answer is so clear, folks, that even the experts in the media, this is all clearly preventable. If we just put one man with one woman till death do they part, that's God's plan. So when everything else fails, just go back and read the directions in the Bible, the basic instructions before leaving earth. So what about all the poor little babies that have been afflicted with certain diseases and that? Well, think about it like this. If someone willingly steps off a 10-story building and hits the bottom, that's the due recompense of their error. So what if he has a little baby in his arms and he steps off that building? Will that innocent baby also die? Well, of course, sadly, that baby will suffer the same fate. So we know that the innocent suffer. Now, when God judges the world, he's going to do it with a lot more specificity. So God doesn't really have to judge these sexual sins. He leaves that to our own devices. You know, we can make choices, but we cannot choose the consequence of our choice. And today people are saying all sorts of deviant behaviors are okay, all right, acceptable and approved.
But here's what God says. In Romans chapter 1, verse 24, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. God just gave them up. And then in Romans chapter 1, verse 26, Paul says, for this cause God gave them to unto vile affections, for even their women did change their natural use to that which is against nature. And then in Romans chapter 1, verse 28, it continues, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, and isn't that what's happening? We heard that with George Carlin, as he disparaged rights, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. And that's what George Carlin has, folks. Now, a reprobate mind is a mind that can't think straight. That's why I call it stinking thinking. So when people begin to justify this kind of deviant behavior, God just says, all right, I give you up. I give you over. And so that's what I mean when I say the judgment is built into the sin. But aren't people born that way? That's what a lot of people say. Well, God would never cripple somebody and then blame them for limping. So these urges come out of the heart, which is wicked and sinful. And the same urge that drives people towards incest, adultery, violence, drunkenness, and even kleptomania is the same sinful, wicked heart that has caused all the woes we see in the world. So when someone says, I was born that way, and yes, because we're all born that way as sinners, and that's why we need to be born again. So I'm not going to argue with you whether or not you were born homosexual. Maybe you were. That's not the point. The point is that we're all born with sin, and we all need salvation that comes only through the blood of the cross. So sadly, when Hollywood glamorizes so much of this perversion and television goes on and tries to normalize it, yet when you or I speak out, people will say things like, well, you don't have to watch it. Turn it off. That's not the point, folks. That's like saying, well, if you don't like crime in the streets, then just stay inside. Or if you don't like the pollution in the air, don't breathe it. Folks, the streets belong to you and me. Jesus said, occupy till I return. The air belongs to us to breathe, and the airwaves also belong to us to speak the truth as alt media. Now, they believe they can pollute the airwaves, and they can pollute the air, and they can take the carbon dioxide out of the air and kill our plant life and our flora and our fauna. But they have no more right to pollute the airwaves and our air and destroy our world than they do to pollute anything else. This is just stinking thinking. And this is exactly what was happening in both the days of Noah and in the days of Lot. So these were days that included selfish prosperity. And don't we see that today with all this stuff going on with the money laundering and everything that's being uncovered with Joe Biden and the Ukraine connection? Now, some wrongly think that God must be pleased with America because of all the prosperity we've seen over the generations. But this place, although prosperous, is also in a great time of need. And that's exactly what we see in both the days of Lot and Noah. Ezekiel says in chapter 16, verses 49 and 50, behold, this is the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Now pay attention here, folks. Pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy, and they were haughty and committed abominations before me. Therefore, I took them away as I saw good. Now, notice how this describes Sodom. They were proud. So the sin that used to cower and hide now struts down the streets on Pride Day. Sound familiar? But not only were they proud, they had a fullness of bread. That means their bellies were full. They had more than they needed. And they also had an abundance of time. It was referred to by the prophet as an abundance of idleness. So they had a short work week, or they had a universal basic income, and they hardly needed to work at all in Sodom. Sounds like today, doesn't it? Just imagine two men in Sodom walking down the street, and one of them says to another, you know, God teaches that the lifestyle of Sodom is wicked and vile. Do you think God's going to judge us because of the way we're living? And the other guy says, well, I don't think so. I don't think he's going to judge us. Look how prosperous we are. Now, if they had a stock market, he would have said, look at the Dow Jones. Look at the NASDAQ. Look at how we're doing. Surely God is smiling upon us.
But the Bible teaches that the very zenith or height of their prosperity, fire and brimstone fell upon them. And God left Sodom in smoking ruins. And Jude tells us, as an example to those who should live after ungodliness. As it was in the days of Noah, as it was in the days of Lot, so shall it be. Plus, these were also days where solemn preaching, like what I'm sharing with you right now, happened, folks. There are men that God has called up to preach the truth, not watered down. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 13, it says, "And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth." God sends this preemptive warning to man through Noah. And God always does that, folks. He sends a warning before he sends judgment. And I'm sending a warning to you right now, folks, that repent, because the hour is at hand when Jesus is coming, folks. But Noah not only built the ark, he was also preaching like I'm doing to you right now. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5, the Bible says through the inspired word of St. Peter, "And God spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness." So Noah was a preacher who preached with the wrath of God in the foreground and the ring of hammers from his family in the background. A contemporary man of his time, known as Enoch, and mentioned by Jude in verse 14, where he tells us that Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, "Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints." But the preaching of these ministers in that day did not penetrate the hearts of these lost and fallen men and women. They were marrying and giving in marriage, eating and drinking. Their technology, their art, their culture, their entertainment, it puffed them all up, folks. They weren't a bunch of cave people in skins with clubs, living in caves, tree of the fruit of knowledge. And they saw themselves as rich and increased with goods and in the need of nothing. They were given forbidden technologies by the fallen angels, folks. They had great cultures. Can you imagine what a newspaper article would read like had somebody from today gone back and interviewed Noah? Imagine the field day they would have had with that man, that godly man of God. Think about it, folks. Just imagine the political cartoons that could have been drawn about this narrow-minded fundamentalist called Noah, and what the liberal clergy would have said about Noah, and what people say about me and when I preach like this. Well, maybe something like this, okay? "If Noah had heard anything about a flood, I assure you, it would not have been with literal water." I could just see some liberal preacher preaching that. That's what they would have said. Folks, I'm telling you, our generation has been warned. There has been so much faithful preaching that people don't hear it. So these are the last days, and we're going to be marked with this selfishness, with this solemn preaching. You know, Noah was a preacher of righteousness, and God sent me here to warn you that the days of Noah and the days of Lot are upon us now today. Plus, final sign is that this will be a day of sudden panic. But just when everything seems to be going fine, maybe we fix the problems with the government, or at least it appears to be that way. Maybe Trump gets back in and he's having peace all around the world. Then suddenly there's going to be panic. Jesus said they were eating, drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage. In other words, the rounds of life went on and on. Genesis 6:17 reads, "And behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die." Now, I don't know how that day begins. I don't know when it'll begin exactly. Maybe it's going to be a bright, sunny day. And then the clouds start to gather. I don't know how it happened back during Noah, and I don't know how it's going to happen this time, but I'm telling you, it's going to come suddenly and cataclysmically, and that's my point. Back in the days of Noah, maybe the wind started to pick up, began to moan across the earth, and then God said to Noah, "Okay, Noah, get your family together and get into the ark." So God brings Noah into the ark, and he shuts the door, and God shuts Noah in as he shuts the water out, along with all the others who mocked him. And suddenly the earth begins to rock and the heavens open and the sluice gates of heaven begin to pour a great flood of water upon the earth, and water belches out of the earth, and the waters begin to rise. And by the way, recently, did you know scientists uncovered this underground ocean, larger than the Arctic Ocean, and they named it the Beijing Anomaly, or the Ringwoodite Reservoir. And you could read about it. It's out there in extremetech.com. So go back to then and think about the people that were laughing at Noah in his day, mocking him, saying, what's this kook up to? Now, there's some indication that up to this time, there was never rain on the earth, and the earth was actually watered by a vapor, a canopy of vapor, people that lived in valleys. As they began to run to high places, as for the first time in their life, they saw this water flooding. Then after a while, the water got up to dangerous levels, and they began to beat in the door of the ark saying, Noah, let us in. But I'm telling you, folks, it was too late by then. Why? Because God had shut the door. He shut the water out along with the people who laughed and mocked and scoffed at Noah. Now, I'm teaching you the word of God, and I'm telling you, there's an ark of safety, and his name is the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And if you'll just come to him, repent and trust, I promise you on the authority of the word of God that he will change you, he'll transform you, and he's going to give you this joy unspeakable, full of glory. Now, you may be asking yourself, well, what's this going to cost me? I'm going to tell you, folks, when Noah drove that last nail into the ark, he was probably a poor man, spent every dime he had. But when he came out of that ark, he inherited the entire earth. So he went from a minority to the majority. And my point is, don't worry about what it costs you, because what's your life worth? Jesus is our ark of safety, and if you put your trust in him, I promise you, from the word of God, he's going to save you. Just forsake all and trust him. Put your hands up and say, Lord, I surrender. Now, Jesus may come back this afternoon, just as in the days of Noah. There's going to be eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, and then that day comes. But I'm telling you, he will save you, and I promise you on the authority of the word of God that he'll save you if you simply trust him. Prayer. Now, this prayer doesn't save you, folks. God does, but he's going to hear this. Just say, dear God, I'm a sinner. I'm lost. I know I need to be saved. I want to be saved before this happens. Jesus, save me. I believe you died to save me and promised to save me if I'd simply surrender to you, repent and trust in you. So I do now with all my heart. I believe you paid for my sin with your blood on the cross, and I believe that Jesus, I believe that you were raised from the dead by the power of the Holy Spirit. And I receive you today as my Lord and Savior. In your holy name I pray. Folks, I love you all, and I'm out of time. So in the words of Winston Churchill, never give in, no, never, ever.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in, except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And remember, folks, now is the time for salvation, just as in the days of Noah. Let's listen to Missy Edwards again.
Time is ticking by, and I can feel an explosion inside. And time is ticking by, and I can feel an explosion inside, as in the days of Noah, as in the days of Noah. Though we're drinking, marrying, laughing, as in the days of Noah. What a fool, they say, to build a boat on sand. What a fool, they say. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. As in the days of Noah, so it will be in the coming of the Son of Man. 2,000 years. Do you really think that he's coming? Come on, let's just get real. But remember this first, that many, many, many scoffers will come. And when the rain starts falling, it's too late. It's too late. And when the rain starts falling, it's too late. It's too late. As in the days of Noah, it's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. But one day, 2 days, 3 days gone by, and time, time is ticking by, and I can feel an explosion inside. People get ready, Jesus is coming. And many, 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 many scoffers will rise in that day, and they'll say, it's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained, rain. Go away. Hide it from the wrath of the Lamb. When the